Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe. Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Grab a comfortable seat, because today we're really digging into this government shutdown.
Yeah, it's quite something.
It really is. It's grinding into its third week now. And honestly, looking at the sources, everything we thought would force some kind of action, it just hasn't.
That's exactly right. And that's really our goal today for you listening. We want to get past the usual headlines.
Mm-hmm.
We need to dissect the actual mechanics here. What were the pressure points, specifically that military payroll deadline everyone talked about?
Right.
And how did the administration, well, sidestep that one, let's just say, creatively.
Creatively and maybe not quite legally.
We'll get into that. Then we need to look ahead. What are the next deadlines? Which ones might actually stick?
And the blame game. Mm-hmm. Where does the public stand right now? We get some fresh polling data.
Exactly. We're aiming to give you the full picture, the political map of this whole situation.
Okay, let's unpack that first big one, though. The military payroll. That was supposed to be the big lever, right? Coming up on the 15th. Everyone expected that to force some talks.
Oh, absolutely. Our sources don't just call it the third rail of American politics.
No.
They add the fourth and fifth rail, too.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, you really can't overstate how politically dangerous it is to let active duty soldiers go without pay.
Especially given the political rhetoric, right?
Yeah.
One side constantly claim, you know, they're the ones who really support the troops.
Precisely. It was the administration's single biggest vulnerability right out of the gate.
So the Democrats saw that opening. And they moved fast.
They did, with a very specific bill.
Just funding the military payroll. Nothing else attached.
Exactly. Clean. Surgical. And that put the Republicans, particularly Trump and Speaker Johnson, in a huge bind.
Why was that such a problem for them? I mean, paying the troops seems like an easy vote.
Well, it was a trap. A really clever one on three different levels, according to our sources.
Okay, let's break those down.
First, the obvious one. Optics. They absolutely could not afford the message that the Democrats were the only ones looking out for military families.
Right. Voting against paying the troops, even for procedural reasons.
Oh.
That just looks terrible.
Terrible. So that's level one. Simple messaging.
Makes sense. But you said three levels. The other two sound like they get into the weeds of how Congress works.
They absolutely do. And they're fascinating. Reason number two, controlling the House calendar itself.
How so?
To even consider that Democratic bill, Speaker Johnson would have had to call the House back into session.
Okay.
And if the House is in session, our sources point out, they'd have to swear in Representative-elect Adelita Grisalva.
Oh, and her vote matters because...
Because once she's sworn in, the Democrats hit 218 members.
The magic number.
The magic number, okay. Exactly. Enough signatures for a discharge petition.
Okay, let's just pause there for a second. Discharge petition... It's pretty deep inside baseball. What does that actually mean for, you know, someone listening?
Right. Think of it like this. It's a way for the minority party, if they can get that simple majority of 218 votes to basically go around the speaker.
Bypass him completely.
Yep. And force a specific bill onto the House floor for a vote, no matter what the leadership wants.
So if the Democrats could pull that off,
they could potentially force a vote on funding the entire government, essentially seizing control of the shutdown narrative from Johnson and Trump.
And the source mentioned something about the ghost of Jeffrey Epstein coming back with that petition. That adds another layer of toxicity.
It does. That particular petition is tied up with some, let's say, highly controversial figures and legal issues.
So some Republicans would find it politically radioactive to sign on even if they wanted the shutdown to end.
Exactly. Johnson and Trump desperately want to avoid any situation where that whole mess gets dredged up again under the media spotlight.
So keeping the House adjourned avoids Grijalva being sworn in, which prevents the discharge petition, which keeps that controversy buried.
Precisely. It's all connected. Which leads straight into the third reason they had to kill that payroll bill.
Which is about controlling the message.
Controlling the narrative, absolutely. By limiting media access to, well, the internal Republican drama.
If the House isn't in session, reporters can't just wander the halls grabbing quotes.
Exactly. If the House is in session, you get wall-to-wall coverage. Huh. And that inevitably shines a light on any cracks in party discipline.
Like Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene. The source mentioned her going apostate.
Yeah, she's cited as one example, someone who's broken ranks on key issues. If the House is meeting, she and others like her get a huge platform.
Making it much harder for Johnson and Trump to project this image of, you know, unified Republican leadership.
Impossible, really. So avoiding that Democratic payroll bill was critical for messaging, for procedural control, and for preventing internal fights from spilling out.
Okay, so they had to stop the Democrats' bill.
Mm-hmm.
But they still had to pay the troops. The deadline was real. And this is where the administration pulls off what you call the high wire act.
That's a good way to put it. Suddenly, they found $8 billion just lying around, apparently.
Right. Found it between the White House couch cushions, maybe.
Something like that. And this is where, you know, the whole rule of law question gets really, really interesting.
Because that $8 billion wasn't just unassigned cash.
Not at all. What's really striking here is the sheer boldness of it. This was money Congress had specifically appropriated, given a specific job.
And that job wasn't military salaries.
Nope. It was for a research project.
What kind of research project are we talking about? Just to give people a sense of it.
Well, think about it. Like, funds set aside for something very specific and usually long term. You know, maybe a big NASA project studying deep space.
Okay.
Or perhaps CDC funding for research into, say, new tropical diseases. Very specific goals set by Congress.
And the administration just took that money.
And used it to pay the military's electric bill, essentially. Met the payroll.
The source says that's not in line with what Congress intended. Which sounds like lawyers speak for.
For illegal, yeah. It's a repurposing of funds that goes against the specific direction of Congress.
So wait a minute. If it's illegal, I mean, isn't this a violation of the separation of powers? Congress controls the purse strings.
It is.
Why aren't the Democrats screaming bloody murder, filing lawsuits? Isn't the whole point of a shutdown sometimes about forcing adherence to appropriation law?
Logically, yes. It absolutely sets a dangerous precedent. No question.
So why let him get away with it?
Politics, pure and simple. The analysis here is that Trump will get away with it.
Because?
Because the Democrats are incredibly unlikely to, as the source puts it, make a stink.
Why not?
Because nobody wants to be seen as arguing against paying the troops.
Ah, so if they challenge the legality of using the $8 billion.
They open themselves up to the attack. See? The Democrats want to stop our soldiers from getting paid.
Even though the issue is the source of the funds, not the payment itself.
Doesn't matter in the political arena. It's a brilliant move politically. Legally dubious, absolutely. But politically, it's almost unassailable.
Wow. That's cynical,
yeah.
But undeniably effective. It neutralizes the immediate crisis, kicks the can down the road.
Unassailable is the key word. They took the most acute, the most politically damaging short-term problem right off the table.
Okay, so they bought themselves some time. The immediate payroll crisis is averted, or at least delayed until Halloween.
Right.
So where does the pressure shift now? You mentioned the White House had threatened these grandiose layoffs, but that hasn't really materialized in a big way.
No. The sources say only about 4,000 layoffs so far, which, you know, isn't insignificant for those people, but it's not enough to make the blue team sweat, as they put it.
Probably just enough to say they did something.
Likely. Mostly for show, perhaps, to avoid looking like Trump chickened out of the shutdown fight entirely.
So if layoffs aren't the main pressure point right now, what is?
It shifts. It shifts from that acute political crisis, the payroll, to more systemic, grinding operational strain.
The government apparatus seizing up.
Exactly. And if you look at the bigger picture, two key areas are highlighted as already operating at much less than full capacity. And that creates real political risk down the line.
Which areas are those?
The federal courts, for one.
Okay. How are they impacted? Beyond just, you know, fewer staff working.
Well, the core constitutional stuff continues. Criminal cases, urgent matters, but non-essential civil cases, filings, just piling up, grinding to a halt in many places.
Meeting backlogs.
Massive backlogs, which means delays in justice, problems for businesses waiting on rulings. That creates pressure from lawyers, from the business community. It's a slow burn, but it builds.
And the second area?
The nation's air traffic control system.
That one feels much more immediate, more visceral for people.
It is. Now, controllers are essential employees, so they have to work. But they're working without pay.
Which has got to affect morale focus.
Absolutely. Plus, the pipeline for training new controllers, that's paused during the shutdown. So you have fewer people under more stress doing a critical job.
That sounds like a recipe for increased risk.
It is. The risk of human error goes up. Even a near-miss incident involving air traffic control that makes headlines instantly.
And suddenly the shutdown isn't just some abstract political fight in D.C. It's personal. It's about safety when you fly.
Exactly. That kind of operational failure, especially in the air, could generate serious, serious political heat very quickly. It could become the unexpected catalyst that forces action.
So we had the slow burn operational strain building in courts and air traffic control.
Yeah.
But are there other hard deadlines we need to watch? Like the payroll one?
Yes. The listener needs to track two specific dates coming up fast. First, the military payroll problem. It comes back around.
When?
October 31st, Halloween. That's the next payday.
And is that $8 billion they found enough to cover that one too?
That's the big question. The government spends roughly $200 billion a year on military pay and benefits. That $8 million might not stretch.
So they might have to go scrounging behind the White House couch cushions again. Find some more technically illegal money.
Either that, or they'll be forced back to Congress. Maybe for another very specific military-only stopgap funding bill. They can't keep pulling rabbits out of hats indefinitely.
Okay, so October 31st is one to watch. What's the other date?
The one that the Democrats have reportedly circled on their calendars.
Which is?
November 1st, the very next day.
Why is November 1st so critical?
Because that's when the shutdown stops being mostly about government operations and starts hitting millions of Americans directly in their wallets.
Oh.
November 1st is the day people typically start shopping for their health insurance plans for the next year on the exchanges.
Ah, the Affordable Care Act marketplaces.
Yep, exactly. And many of those people, millions of them, rely on government subsidies to afford their premiums.
And with the government shutdown,
they're going to log on and discover those subsidies are gone. Or their premiums are set to, as the source puts it, go through the roof.
Oof. That's not abstract. That's real money people were counting on.
It's immediate financial pain. And that is a very different kind of pressure point than military payroll or court backlogs. It hits average voters directly and personally.
Which leads us perfectly into the public opinion aspect.
Mm-hmm.
How are people actually viewing all this political maneuvering? We've got new poll data.
Yes, the latest Reuters-Ipsos poll, our sources call it instructive, gives us a real snapshot.
Okay, what does it tell us? Who's getting blamed?
Well, it's interesting. They asked the question in two ways. First, they forced respondents to choose who deserves the most blame.
Pick just one culprit.
Right. And in that scenario, it was basically a statistical tie. Congressional Democrats got 37%, and Donald Trump also got 37%.
Wow, neck and neck. And where did the congressional Republicans land?
They got 19%.
So if you force people to pick one single entity, it's split between Trump and the Democrats.
But if you combine the blame assigned to Trump and the congressional Republicans,
that's 37 plus 19, 56%. Close to two-thirds, actually, if you round it differently or consider margin of error.
Exactly. Close to two-thirds are pointing the finger somewhere in the direction of the GOP when forced to pick the primary villain. That's not a great look for the red team.
Not great at all. But you said they asked it another way, too.
Yes. They also let people assign a fair amount of blame to any or all of the players they thought deserved it. No forced choice.
More nuanced, What did that show?
That showed widespread disgust, frankly. Congressional Republicans got blame from 67% of people.
Okay.
Donald Trump, 63%. And congressional Democrats, also 63%.
Whoa. So basically everyone is blaming everyone.
Pretty much. The real insight there isn't that one side is clearly winning the blame game in the public's eye.
It's that voters are just fed up.
Exactly. Deeply unhappy. And they blame, you know, basically everyone in Washington, at least some.
So summing up the polls.
While the Democrats maybe come out slightly better than Trump and the Republicans combined if you force a single choice.
The margin isn't huge.
It's really not, which means that slight edge they might have. It's fragile. It wouldn't take much to shift that blame narrative.
Like a major air traffic control incident, maybe?
Or sheer panic when those healthcare subsidy notices go out November 1st. Something tangible could easily tip the scales and make it the blue team's problem in the public eye.
Which must make some Democrats nervous, particularly the ones in tough re-election fights.
Absolutely. And that brings us to what our sources call the canary in the coal mine for the Democrats.
Who's that?
Senator John Ossoff, the Democrat from Georgia.
Right. Ossoff's a Democrat, not Republican, as mistakenly noted in the outline. And he's considered maybe the most vulnerable Senate Democrat up for re-election next year.
Correct. Thanks for clarifying. He's the one everyone's watching because he has the most to lose politically if this shutdown starts hurting Democrats back home.
So if he starts to break ranks.
If he starts signaling he's had enough, maybe voting with some others often seen as potentially crossing lines, folks like Fetterman, Cortez Masto, maybe Angus King, who caucuses with them.
If Ossoff joins them in supporting, say, a basic continuing resolution just to reopen the government,
that could be the first crack in the dam. It gives political cover to other moderate or vulnerable Democrats who are feeling the heat.
It signals that Democratic unity might be fracturing under the pressure of, you know, actual voter concerns back in their state.
Precisely. And that kind of momentum shift could allow Republicans to potentially end the shutdown on terms that are more favorable to them.
So the big picture takeaway here
is that the shutdown is dragging on because the initial most potent political pressure points, specifically that military payroll deadline, were diffused.
Using tactics that were, shall we say, legally questionable, but politically very effective.
Exactly. Those stopgaps bought time. They delayed the moment of reckoning where the political pain would force a compromise.
The first big political hammer blow was neutralized.
Right. So now we're in this period of watching the slower burning fuses, the operational strains, the approaching financial deadlines for regular people.
The political room to maneuver is shrinking as we get closer to the end of the month.
Definitely. That illegal fix bought time, but the clock is ticking down again.
Which really brings us back to that November 1st date, doesn't it? The healthcare subsidies.
It feels pivotal.
Will that direct financial squeeze on millions of Americans finally be the thing, the unstoppable force that compels negotiation?
Or does the administration find another rabbit in the hat, another pot of money appropriated for something else that they can use illegally to buy just a little more time?
It raises a really important question for you, the listener, to think about and track. When does a government shutdown stop being a political story about Washington
and start being about your own bank account or your family's health care costs?
But that fundamentally changed the political calculation. Keep a close eye on November 1st.